Native Client Development for the Cloud with Lauren Bunyon.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and run your software with confidence in Azure, all while taking advantage of everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. And I'm continuing to do a ton of online user group speaking, as are others. And if you run a .NET or Azure-related user group, I'd love to give a presentation for you. Just reach out, send me an email. And this episode is sponsored by ClearMeasure. And they are a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. And so if they can help, please get in touch. And also be sure to check out the new video show, Architect Tips, small bite-sized video tips about architecture topics. Now, today's guest is a longtime friend, Lauren Bunyon, and he's a cloud advocate at Microsoft working with Azure in the developer relations team. And prior to joining Microsoft, he was a Microsoft Most Valuable Professional, MVP, for Windows development from around 2007 to 2017. He's also a regional director around the 2014-2015 timeframe, and a Xamarin MVP as well during that, as well as a whole host of other things. Original founder and creator of the MVVM Lite framework for WPF and lots of other things. User group leader, frequent speaker. So, Lauren, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
Thank you so much. I'm doing great, and it's great to see you. And like you were saying, we are longtime friends, but it's also been too long since we met last time in person, right?
It is, but it's all coming back. It's going to happen.
It will. It will. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, there's probably a lot of people who have either heard of you or heard you speak or have even used the MVVM Lite framework in the past. But now you've been doing a lot of cloud stuff at Microsoft. Give us a quick rundown of kind of the high points over the last decade plus, just so the listeners kind of get to know you a little bit.
Yeah, with pleasure. I mean, you know, I started working with, you know, with software engineering and software development a long time ago. Like, it's been almost 25 years now. And I've gone through really a lot of development, but I would say I fell in love with .NET a long time ago in 2001. And I started working with .NET really for web development at the time. And so it was ASP.NET 1.0, and it was still raw around the edges, I would say. And it was quite tricky to do development, especially, I would say, to coerce .NET to do the things I wanted it to do, which was really single page applications, was what now we call single page applications, but which at the time not many people were doing, right? And so a lot of JavaScript, et cetera, et cetera. But really my love for client application development took really a big turn when I discovered WPF and Windows Presentation Foundation. I still remember the thrill of discovering that technology at Mix 2006, which was also my first large conference. It was also the first time I was traveling in a foreign country for work. And so it was a lot of firsts, right? And I remember the energy in the room and this realization of, wow, that is really something I want to feel more. And I need this kind of energy. And then I started, actually, I was very lucky because I started going to conferences more. I came back from Mix 06 and started blogging. And that blog, actually, I was lucky enough that it attracted the attention of someone on the WPF team. And eventually, I got the MVP in 2007. And since then, I was very active in this area. So I was known as a client application developer, very active with WPF, later Silverlight, of course, later Xamarin as well, and mobile development and all that. But really on the client much. And when I became a regional director, I really noticed that client application development was not really the main focus of those people. And so for those of you listeners who don't know, regional directors are not employed by Microsoft, which is always a little bit confusing. They are actually community people. But at the difference of MVPs, of most valuable professionals, they are a little bit less about deep technical knowledge and a little bit more about broad strategical knowledge, I would say. So, and many people are both MVPs and regional directors. It's just that the focus and the context of the discussions are a little bit different. So I joined this group and I noticed everybody's talking about Azure, the cloud, AI, and I was feeling a little bit that I needed to maybe refocus my career or at least take a good look at those new technologies, because I felt that it would probably be very important in the near future, you know. And as things go, it's funny because I hadn't planned more than that, really, like my next learning path should probably be more about Azure. But at some point, I, you know, through the power of networking and the power of community, I actually got a call from, you know, my good friend and the person who is now my manager, Scott Kate, who out of the blue called me and said, hey, we are building this new team at Microsoft called Cloud Advocacy. Would you like to interview for that? Nice. And it, you know, sometimes in life you're lucky, and I'm definitely very privileged to have had that call, because the timing was just perfect. It's exactly at the time where I was feeling, all right, I need to kind of think about, you know, what I want to do in the future, and maybe I need also, probably I needed a new challenge at the time. And so yeah, you know, it's funny. Scott called me and told me, well, you're probably going to say no, but, and then he did his speech, right? And I was like, why do you think I would say no to that? And he said, well, you know, probably you already got, because I was very close from Microsoft, obviously, through the MVP and the RD program and all mm-hmm. that, you probably got many job offers already. And obviously, you always rejected them since you're not at Microsoft. But actually, that was not the case. And maybe the few times that I talked about joining Microsoft, it was not necessarily for activities that I thought were really fitting with me. And so this new group was a great challenge, but it was also a fitting challenge in the sense that they told me, look, we realize that you don't know anything about Azure, but we want you to learn. And through the learning process, we want you to teach others. Like, what was nice. your learning process?
Well, Scott Cade is really good about casting vision.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. The interview process was great, I thought. And then I joined this, at the time, very, very small team. I had the chance to work quite closely with Scott Guthrie on some of the presentations that he was doing. Helping that, and it was really cool. But at the same time, I realized now, almost four years later, the extent of what I didn't know when I joined, and that's a little bit scary, right?
Oh, the more we learn, the more we realize how much we have yet to learn.
That is so true. Yeah.
Well, there's so many a lot of the listeners and so many developers around the industry that grew up on the web. And so when they think, oh, I need to create some type of application, do something, immediately they think, oh, I need to do it on the web. You know, we started as an industry in the late 90s, really, with the web revolution. As programmers, I want to remind all the listeners, we started preferring the web because it was so hard to deploy software to actual computers. And then when we found the ability to just effectively deploy an application by having somebody go to a URL in the browser, and then boom, the application's right there and it's doing, that was like so attractive. The entire problem of deployment just goes away. But for people who've never done native client development, it's the most productive, most powerful. How do you think of client development and why it's just so great?
Yeah, it's something that has occupied my mind a lot, and with a lot of satisfaction, but also a lot of dissatisfaction, I would say. And so, you know, the satisfaction I got from working in client application development, and especially in the firm where I was working, which at the time was called Identity Mine. This firm got acquired and changed name, et cetera, et cetera. But back then, one of the big strengths of Identity Mine is that we were working, like almost half of the staff was designers. And for me, that was really already at the start. I remember in 2001 when I started doing more professional web development, because before that I was doing more, embedded programming and all that. So I really moved to client application development around 2001. And I had a lot of frustrations with the web design, with the web, especially for applications, I would say, because I was not coding websites. I was coding applications that happened to run on the web, right? So again, it was an early concept, I guess, but and I was really frustrated because I couldn't exactly render the experience that my stakeholders had in mind, et cetera, et cetera. And back then, you know, CSS was a mess. JavaScript was primitive. I mean, we were working, you know, without any frameworks at the time. So it was really pure vanilla JavaScript and all that. And so moving to something like WPF suddenly opened my eyes to what was possible. Suddenly I was able to do, and we are talking, you know, 15 years ago, right? Able to do a seamless animations with splines and with acceleration and all that. And I was able to do gradients, and suddenly WPF was rendering to DirectX and not to old systems anymore, where you couldn't do layering and all that. So in WPF, suddenly I could do layers, and I could have a semi-transparent layer in front of another layer. And I was building all these kind of very, very rich experiences, and that was fantastic. The deployment that you mentioned, yeah, that was definitely a frustration. But it was compensated by all this richness that we had. But one thing, so that is the satisfaction part. And then later after that, moving to Silverlight, of course, kind of solved a little bit the deployment process problem, because now we were deploying through a simple URL, and then these things was working. Silverlight died. We all know the story, or probably everybody hopefully remembers Silverlight, never forget. but essentially, that was a very interesting time. But the thing which is frustrating me, and which really frustrated me a lot when I left my former firm to join Microsoft and to go more into Azure, was this incompatibility of landscapes that we still have. Like, it's really hard to build, and it's really hard to let people understand that you should try to build cross-platform applications and cross-platform experiences. And it is technically possible to an extent, right? For example, with technologies like Xamarin, which now is .NET MAUI, or at least going there, etc. So there is always like a push, especially from Microsoft, I will say, in that space. But there are also a lot of people who just don't care. I had an example the other day where I wanted to use an application. I won't name the application because if you go into my Twitter history, you'll find it, because I had an exchange with them. And I was really frustrated because they just released an application for iOS and they don't have plans. Well, they say, okay, it's on the timeline, but we have no idea what the timeline is for Android. And I can't understand why a firm would do that today, you know, because you have possibilities. So I think the real frustration I had with the client application development landscape was more with the business managers who don't understand the necessity to, you know, take multi-devices in account and to make things work on multiple platforms. And at the time where at the end of my client application developer career, if I can say that this way, I was really frustrated by all those discussions. And I felt that it was a constant fight that I had to fight all the time. And not just that, but also to make them understand the importance of good design and good user experience. And I feel a little bit that we lost this battle a little bit, that the people who care about design kind of lost this battle a little bit towards, you know, the importance of being quick on the market and releasing as fast as possible. And if the experience is not great, well, it doesn't matter. You know, so that was a little bit my feeling. However, I don't want to be negative. I'm also very excited by the new development that we see. I mean, I've been playing a lot with Blazor recently, and more than playing, actually developing production apps with Blazor. And it was a fantastic experience. I think this is like a new development in the world of the web that I really welcome. I still do web development, like standard ones. But I would say that these days I'm more excited by really the whole thing, which is powering all those apps, which is the backend, building APIs, building all kinds of services that we have. I'm always enthusiastic for my job, so I'm lucky this way. But when I open the portal in Azure and check what new toys I have, literally, right? It's like a toy box. It's fascinating. And so I think it's, I already said that 20 years ago. I still think the same. It's a great time to be a developer. .NET is very mature, but at the same time, there is still a lot of innovation in the space. So yeah, it's really cool to see those things happening, right?
Well, you're on one of the Azure related teams at Microsoft now, and so to you, what's your vision? And maybe Microsoft has a vision too, but what do you think of when you think of native client development for the cloud, or in the cloud, or with the cloud? What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the thing which is interesting now, and it was already like that long time ago, but it was much harder, was how do you, and especially when you think about cross-platform development, which is, again, dear to my heart. I think people understood that now. I really love my apps. I mean, there is nothing better than, you know, listening to Spotify, and here I'm happy to name them because I'm happy with them, right? Listening to Spotify on my phone and then suddenly switching my TV on and saying, hey, now I want you to continue playing the exact same song at the exact same time on my TV, right? Because I happen to have an Android TV, but it will work the same with all the platforms that Spotify runs on. Or I want to send that to a web browser running on my, you know, or to the application running on my Surface, et cetera, et cetera. So this is really very satisfying. And the nice thing now is that, you know, in order to have that running, you really want to sync your architecture with a decoupling between the stuff that is on the server that should run exactly the same everywhere, right? And the stuff that's on the client, which personally I like to develop specific for a device, because I still think that native applications give you the best experience from a user standpoint. And I do understand the strengths of the web, definitely. This is true, but I do like to have my apps running natively, you know. So if you want to have that, at the time, back then, it was really complicated, because when I, you know, I developed a mobile application for the SBB, which is the train system here in Switzerland, right? Big company, and it was extremely complex to work with them, because underlying they manage something like, they manage a ticketing system for something like, I don't know, probably 30 plus different companies of public transportation in Switzerland. And so when you buy a ticket and you say, all right, I want to go from Zurich to Geneva, you're going to take multiple means of transportation. And with one ticket, you can take possibly a boat on the Lake of Zurich. And then after that, you take a tramway, which is a different company. And then you take a train, which is yet a different company. Maybe you even take a cable car at some point. Mm. So it's extremely complicated, right? And so the servers they had were just not ready for mobile development at all, right? So because we were in a time crunch, we had to really start handling a lot of complexity on the mobile application, such as, you know, they were using SOAP, for example, as a system at the time, which, you know, is quite comfortable for a rich desktop application, but not very comfortable for a mobile application, because you deal with really tons of data that you have to parse on the device, and this was really complicated. So these days, we definitely wouldn't handle that this way, right? We would have a very lean and mean and fast API. You have all the problems of authentication that you need to solve. Well, you know, these days it's still hard, but easier, I would say. You can deal with that in an easier manner. Recently, I created a Blazor application for an internal usage that we are using at Microsoft. It's actually an open source application, and people can use it in the outside as well. It's called Timekeeper. It's an application which is which has a Blazor front end, and it has a back end made of Azure Function, SignalR. It's a static web application, so I deploy that on a static web app server on Azure. And what it does is that it keeps the time, like the name says. And I know I'm Swiss, and it's kind of caricatural, but basically we have a daily show on Learn TV, so you can watch this show and see us go. And it's half an hour, and so I'm sure you know the problem as well, which is how am I going to tell my guest that, you know, the time is up and he should stop talking now, right? Which is maybe what is going through your mind right now at the moment, Jim. But anyways, the application kind of answers this question by saying, all right, I'm going to start running a clock. It's a 30 minutes. I'm going to start running other clocks because we have segments, or maybe we have a 5-minute segments here or 7-minute segments there. There is somebody who kind of starts and stops the clocks, right? And everybody can use the same clocks, and those clocks are synchronized through SignalR. Now, of course, one challenge I had to overcome when I wrote this was, you know, at first, everything was public, but if you go and check the source, because it's an open source application, you can actually infer from what I'm doing in the source code what URL, what endpoint you need to talk to mess things up, to start stopping the clocks when they should be running. And then our whole show is in disarray, right? So I needed authentication. And, you know, I've been doing, you know, software development for 25 years. And when I hear authentication, I'm still sweating a little bit, right?
Yeah, when are we going to solve that problem?
Yeah, you know, if people were good, if you didn't have to authenticate or to lock your door or things, we would already be on Mars. That's kind of what I think, because we would be so much further in the human development. But unfortunately, people are not good, so we need to solve that. And the cool thing is that in static web apps, it's actually integrated. You don't have to worry about it. You say, oh, I want, you know, my function, my API to be protected to allow only people with a role of, I don't know, host or a role of whatever role you want to give it, right? It's just a name. And then after that, you say, well, that person is a host, that person is a host. And to identify those persons, you rely on established systems, like, for example, Azure AD, okay, for the enterprise. But you can also just rely on GitHub, for example, and say, well, if that person is authenticated into GitHub, and I know that this is a person because I have, you know, that person's username, then I will allow this person to actually start and stop a clock. Otherwise, other people can't. And so building that experience and building the authentication within, which was really in a crush time because we were about to launch the show, was so easy that I still can't believe it, you know. And so what I'm saying here is basically, because we have tools in the back end that allow us to do these kind of things, client application development has become effectively easier, and especially cross-platform application development. Because now, okay, I have a Blazor application, you know, talking to my back end. I could very easily add a native Xamarin application or even a native iOS application with, you know, because essentially I'm just talking to some APIs, right? So once I have figured that thing out and I have figured out the whole authentication mechanism, et cetera, I can concentrate on what's really important for my application's users, which is a user experience. Because the least time I spend on authentication, the most time I can spend on adding nice features and a good user experience to my apps, right? So I'm quite happy about that. And I feel that I've come a little bit round circle in the sense that I was really a client application without any idea of the cloud. Then I went deep into the cloud and kind of let, you know, application development go a little bit. I'm not as much as I used to into that. But now that I'm starting to do applications and doing the full stack, I feel that, wow, okay, we came a long way, and I'm happy that I have the possibility to do that.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery.
And one thing you said that caused me to think about strategy, you mentioned when an application is only available for one type of computer. You mentioned the application is only on iOS and they didn't put it on Android versus the Spotify app where you can go from one to the other and it even remembers where you were. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like one of the strategies that's really important for client development is that your application is available on whatever type of computer your target audience has.
You know, it's a matter of inclusion at the end. And really, inclusion is important and it's more important than ever. And now we try to do really a big work about, and I feel, I don't want really to trivialize anybody's struggles with lack of inclusion in the tech community, because I'm aware, believe me, I'm very aware of the privilege I have and the difficulties that certain communities have to get included into software development and all that. But I can't avoid thinking that if you release an application for just one system, which in that case happens in addition to all the rest to be a system that many people can just not afford, right? I mean, there are tons of people who just cannot afford to buy an iPhone.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Those are, you know, great devices. I'm not into that ecosystem at all, but I recognize that they are, you know, nice devices and all that. But the fact is that many people just can't afford them and so have to go to cheaper systems, possibly Android, possibly Tizen, possibly others, etc. And so when you go and you release an application for just one system, essentially you tell a whole lot of users, look, at the moment, you don't matter to us,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's something that I'm quite sensitive about. And I feel that from that moment on, I don't feel valued by this company. And I'm going to probably reconsider my, you know, being a user of that company. And when they finally release, the application that I was expecting on Android, I might already have moved on to something else because I don't feel that I was valued and all that. So it's really an inclusion problem. And again, right, I don't want to trivialize anybody's struggles or anything, but.
Which is that effectively is a market problem. You're choosing to eliminate a whole bunch of potential customers, or for free apps, sometimes your users are your asset. And so you're limiting yourself.
No, that's completely true. So in addition to everything we said, from an economical standpoint, it just doesn't make sense, right? So yeah, it's complicated. And I think that it's even more frustrating for me because I've spent a considerable amount of time in my career helping people and helping enterprises to actually develop cross-platform applications. And so I know that whatever excuse a firm is taking for not doing it, it's not valid. It's just probably laziness or they lack to understand how it works. Right. They probably got bad advice at some point or something like that.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, if you know that, 99% of your users are on Android only and you decide to release an application for Android only, well, okay, that's, at least there is some kind of strategy behind that, I suppose. But it's not the case. It's never the case for a public app, right? For a public service. So it's a little bit frustrating. And I feel that now that we have the possibility to really architect our application in a neat way and have, we kind of, Azure helped with the problem of, oh my God, I need so much hardware to run stuff and this is going to be expensive and I need to advance the money upfront and all that. And so a lot of that went away. So I really hope that this money and this energy can be put into enhancing the experience of the users, right? Mm-hmm. And having worked with designers a lot, and I still remember, in the days of Mix when, Bill Buxton, for example, a principal designer at Microsoft was giving his presentations about design. And I was really fascinated by that. I thought, wow, this is a whole world that developers don't really know about and business managers probably even less. And I feel a little bit that now people kind of lost touch with that a little bit. I hope that at some point we can go back to to a place where design really, really matters and user experience really matters, and that people are, enterprises are actually ready to invest maybe a little bit more money to create a beautiful user experience, which with a free app model is really difficult to do. And so I think this is really probably the biggest hurdle that we have right now.
Well, when WPF kind of took over from web forms, 15 years ago, that was in an era where for business applications, most businesses would have standardized computers and would issue those computers to employees. And therefore, you knew what type of computer that the people using the software were going to run on, and you had access to it. Whereas even if the users of the application are still internal employees today, and especially because of last year, the number of computers and types of computers are being used across companies and organizations, you just don't even know. And then furthermore, like you mentioned people that don't have iPhones or nice Android phones. My parents are Christian missionaries in Uganda, Africa, and I've kind of quizzed them about the landscape. And there's places that they can go where they have Wi-Fi, but then they have, you know, lower speed cellular networks, and the devices that they have are the least expensive Android phones. It's a totally different market there. And so whatever software that they're going to use from a population perspective needs to work on think of an Android app, think of an Android phone, you know, 10 years ago and what type of hardware, what type of CPU. And so when we're creating applications, that's those are the types of decisions from 15 years ago where we knew what type of computer was going to be running on to we have to think about where this software may be able to run and who we want to reach with it.
Yeah, this is so true. And this is also part of the privilege that we have, the latest phone. And you know, I have, believe it or not, I have 10 gigabit per second in my home right now. And, you know, those are speed that we...
Or where we live and what type of network. Even you know, the United States, there's places smack in the middle and the west parts where you have to find a hilltop to get a cell phone signal or anything. And so if you're in a city, boom, you're gonna have a lot more well-developed internet. Whereas if you're out in the countryside, you're going to have to go searching for it.
But it's also part of our responsibility as developers to never forget that, right? Because there is hardware, there is now we have possibilities to deploy services really literally worldwide with one click of the mouse, right? I can say, okay, I have an application running right now in Western Europe, and suddenly I want to put it in Africa or in UAE or in India or really literally any part of the world. And then you have also so you will have connectivity issues between your client and your servers. You will have maybe the amount of data that you're sending, right? Think about it as well, right? Like, maybe people are paying the data still now without having basically they will have a cap or something, right? Or maybe they pay a certain amount of money. So you need to think about that also. Data. Et cetera, et cetera. And I think that this is really important right now, that now that we have this possibility to deploy our services literally worldwide without constraints other than, okay, I'm going to click there and, for sure, I will have to pay for the service. But I mean, it's the same, right? We really need to think about those things. And the inclusion and in pure economical terms, the market, yes, for sure, but also don't let people behind, right? Because we don't want this divide to grow bigger. And I know, for example, in Africa, for sure, we are trying with Microsoft to really have a lot of education around how can we educate more developers there, because we would like them to be able to develop and also to carve a place in society through that, because, you know, it's a good job. And nowadays I think if last year has proven anything, is that we can definitely work remote. We can function in that way. So why not have, you know, a team of developer in Nigeria, for example, or other places, or in Kenya or wherever we are active, right? However, there is the education, but there is also the inclusion. Like I know that in Africa, for example, they developed banking applications which work purely per SMS, for example, because that's the only infrastructure at the moment which works on a reliable manner, right? And so what does it mean when you send an SMS? It means that basically, first of all, you're never sure it's going to arrive. Okay, so this is a purely, it's totally asynchronous. You know, you have a certain assurance that it's going to arrive, but maybe only tomorrow, right? I mean, you don't really know. So there is a whole different mentality around that. And I feel that is really fascinating. But my hope is that we can, you know, start moving into the mindset of, oh, if we develop something that's running in the US, where we have good connections and all that, we should also account for these kind of scenarios where, well, maybe suddenly the server is out because, I don't know, they don't have money anymore for it, or maybe there is no electricity that day because it's in a place where, you know, electricity doesn't mm-hmm. run so much. And so it's quite important to always think about that. And I think that back then when we were talking a lot in the 2006, 2007, 2008, like that, in the mix times, really in the mix conference times, we are talking a lot about design, about user experience, about how can we make the experience better. And nowadays, you know, it's important to still think about that. Whatever service you develop, your users should be in, basically that's kind of what it is about, right? The users should be always the people that you work for, not mm-hmm. so much your boss and your business manager and whoever is making money with the application you're developing. But at the end, you want your users to actually appreciate what you're doing, right? And what they are using. So yeah, it's important. We kind of took, a lap around, from client application development to cloud application development, I guess.
Well, let's close on an architectural topic. Because so much about what we talked about is being able to write software that can run wherever and however our mm-hmm. target user needs it to. So, and we have MAUI coming out, which targets a whole bunch of different, computing types. We got Blazor that has, high compatibility as well. And a lot of people, especially as .NET 6 comes out this fall, they're going to be asking that question. Okay, I'm developing an application. It can be pretty rich and stateful and awesome with Blazor, pretty rich and stateful and awesome with MAUI, and I can target all kinds of people. So, Lauren, your opinion, MAUI or Blazor or some middle, how do you think about that landscape and how to make that decision?
Yeah, it's it's a really hard question to answer because there is, on one hand, we have this richness of options, which is a blessing and a curse, right? It's a blessing because you can absolutely target your users in the best possible way. At the same time, it's also a curse because this is really the curse of choice, right? You have so much choice and this is hard because next to MAUI, you also have other possibilities. You also have the possibility to just go full Android with Kotlin or whatever you want to do, or full iOS, or to have multiple teams, or you can just say, no, I want to go with vanilla JavaScript and something else because this is what my team knows, or one of the many, many JavaScript frameworks and all that. I think that the answer I have to that is really try to layer your application in a way that your, and that was already true back then when I was advocating MVVM, in the sense that I had a large portion of my code was actually shared on the device. And then after that, I had a thin layer of UI on top of that, which I could then easily adapt to every device that I wanted to, right? It could be a thin layer of HTML, thin layer of Blazor nowadays, or of Silverlight back then, or of something else. It's probably still true for, distributed applications where you have a big portion of the cloud, right? You want your client to be thin. You want to delegate functionality to the cloud when you can, because this is a place where it's going to be shared between multiple systems. But at the same time, you also don't want to forget that whatever you send to the cloud, there will be latency, and that means that you will have a deprecated user experience as soon as you have latency, right? So you want to find the right balance in processing information on your device, because like this, you have the most responsiveness. But at the same time, sending information to your server, because this is where you have the true cross-platform experience, right? You have one server which handles multiple clients. So I think that those are the things that I would say. In terms of choosing a client application framework, well, I'm quite thankful that I don't have to really think about it anymore these days because it's a really hard question. I'm very impressed by Blazor and by the work that people put into that. I think at the end, it often comes up to what does your team know? If your team is a .NET team and you appreciate that Blazor is runs in the web browser with WebAssembly, et cetera, then probably it's a good choice. If your team is way more in JavaScript, then okay, you know, there's no shame, right? I mean, why not implement your UI in JavaScript? If your users are very much on Android and on iOS, then probably MAUI with you know, all the richness that it has because it renders to native components might be a very good choice, right? Mm-hmm. You will never have an easy answer to this problem. But really think about layering your application and keeping things responsive on the client. And I think you will hit a good goal.
Well, Lauren, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us about native client development and the cloud and all the interesting things that you've been doing as a cloud advocate on the Azure team. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure's all mine. And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.